My name is Paul, and I have the privilege of being one of the pastors here at Capitol. And I just want to say to start, forgive me if I seem a little disheveled, if my eyes are a little bit red. I don't know about you, but man, did I need to spend some time in the presence of God this morning in those worship songs. Worship team, thank you so much for choosing those, because I know I got a lot of graves that I'm desperate to be turned into gardens. I got a lot of ashes that I want God to turn into beauty. And I am so grateful that we get to start our day together with that reminder that his overwhelming, never-ending, restless, relentless love comes to find us in order to transform us. Not, as Mackenzie said, not to just leave us as he found us, but to transform us. Thank you, worship team. I owe you big. Anyway, enough gloating about how awesome the worship team is and how selfishly I enjoyed that. We're going to step back into the Gospel of John this morning, chapter 15, and we're going to pick up right where we left off last week. And one thing that you should know is that we as a staff, we have done our best to plan out this series in advance, breaking it into what we feel to be logical segments that each week we can teach through in realistic amounts. Now, if you were with us last week, you had the privilege of hearing from our friend Rob Harder. Rob is a great communicator, but if I'm being honest, I think Troy gave him an unfair and unrealistic assignment. Troy asked Rob to only teach from John 15, 1 through 8. I'll be honest, I could not have done it. I could not have reined myself in, and I could not have contained myself to just those eight verses, especially those eight verses. And if you're a disciple of Jesus, I'm sure that you know this incredible, timeless passage where Jesus tells his closest followers, I am the true vine and my Father is the gardener. Before he goes on to, and this is the beautiful thing, he grafts us into the equation by grafting us into himself as the true vine. And he goes on to say, I am the vine, you are the branches. If you remain in me and I remain in you, you will bear much fruit. Then verse 8 says, this is to my Father's glory, that you bear much fruit, showing yourself to be my disciples. And if you're like me, you're thinking, Rob, you can't stop there, because I couldn't stop there. What in the world is this fruit that glorifies God? What is this fruit that shows that I am a disciple of Jesus? So it made perfect sense to me that Rob could not contain himself to just these eight verses. He went on to read verse 9. He reassured us of the truth of verse 10. And he called us to rejoice in the joy found in verse 11. And then he landed the plane beautifully by showing us the only possible reaction of disciples tapped into and fueled by remaining in the love of Jesus, that we love one another as he has loved us. And I gave the announcements and then got to introduce Rob last week. And then I put on my mask and sat in a chair in this pretty much empty main meeting room at our Salt Lake City campus. And I was 30 feet from the nearest human being. And I listened with excitement, totally not surprised that Rob couldn't contain himself to just John 15, 1 through 8. It didn't surprise me, because Rob had spent the week steeped in and meditating on what it means to remain in a loving, connected, unified relationship with Jesus. He spent a week reflecting on the life of Jesus, the teachings of Jesus, the sacrifice of Jesus. When you fill your mind and you fill your heart with Jesus, when you find yourself unable to pull yourself away from Jesus, when all you want to do with your time is remain in the presence of Jesus, it is impossible to contain the love of Jesus. You can't contain yourself. You're going to tell everyone around you about his love, and you won't be able to hold yourself back from showing everyone around you his love. See, Rob did not overstep his assignment last week. He lived it out. He embodied the truth, not just of John 15, 1 through 8, but of 1 through 17. Disciples of Jesus, when you remain in his love, you can't contain his love. When you remain in the love of Jesus, you can try as you might, but it will just come spilling out of you. There's nothing you can do to put a lid on it, to rein it in. You're going to unleash the love of Jesus. If you're not yet a disciple of Jesus, I'm telling you, once you experience the unconditional, unrestrained love of Jesus, you won't be able to contain yourself and keep yourself from loving other people like Jesus. So before we continue, I want to pray for both disciples of Jesus and those who just want to know, what does it look like to be a disciple of Jesus? I want to invite you to pray with me. Jesus, the name that we've already said easily 24 times this morning. We invite you to speak to us this morning. If we're not yet your disciples, let us hear your invitation and step into your love this morning. And if we are your disciples, invite us, and more than that, empower us to renew our commitment to remain in your love this morning. Oh, you better believe. Selfishly, I want to experience your love and your joy for myself. But Lord, I pray for all of us as disciples that we would not just want to experience your love and your joy, your peace, your patience, your presence for ourselves. Lord, I pray that we would have so much of your love that we just can't keep it to ourselves. Lord, this morning, I pause for just a moment and I ask you, more than ever before, to steady my rowdy heart, to bring clarity to my mind, and anoint these stammering, rambling lips of clay to be a good steward of your word and your love. Amen. So we've already done a recap of last week, and so we're gonna begin this week with a very crucial bit of the overlap. John 15:9 says, "As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love." Have you ever thought about what that means? What it means when God the Father loved Jesus the Son? And I'm not talking about the mystery of the Trinity, Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, engaged in what C.S. Lewis calls the divine dance for all eternity of constantly circling one another, putting the other first, and living their lives in full submission to one another. No, I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about how in the world did God show his love for his son, Jesus, while Jesus actually was on this planet, while he walked the earth? Have you ever thought about that? Let's do a quick review, just in case it's been a while since you read the book. Jesus's mom gets pregnant before she's married, which leads her future husband to almost divorce her until an angel has to step in and say, "Look, it's cool, Joe. This kid was miraculously, immaculately conceived by God." And then you fast forward 9 months into the story, and Jesus's mom and pops can't find a place to stay for the night. So Jesus is born in a dirty stable surrounded by animals on the one hand and outcasts on the other. And then flip the page. A Roman king finds out from a bunch of traveling spiritual seekers that not just a Jewish king, but the Jewish king, the King of Kings, the Lord of Lords has been born. So this Roman king responds by saying, "No problem, kill every Jewish boy under 2 years old." To which Mary and Joe reply, "We better hightail it out of the country. We gotta head somewhere else." Which, by the way, God, you told us that his name would be Jesus, and you told us that his name would be Emmanuel, which means God with us. But now it seems like we're fleeing. It seems like we're the ones that are going back into exile. And in this moment, we have to stop and remember that there's a good possibility that before Jesus could ever walk, he was on the run. And we could go on to talk about how, as a grown man, Jesus was constantly run out of towns by locals, and he was rebuked by religious leaders, and he was even rejected by the friends who claimed to love him. So, let's read verse 9 again. "As the Father has loved me, so have I loved you. Now remain in my love." How are we feeling about this verse now? Now that we replay the story, are we wondering how Jesus can say that the Father ever loved him? Forget about Jesus' story for a minute. If we replay our own stories, are you beginning to wonder how Jesus can claim to love you? Maybe sickness or marital struggles or money stresses from losing your job or any number of things created by this pandemic have caused you to question God's love. Or maybe you're old school. You didn't need a pandemic. For a long time, you've been questioning God's love. Whether it's current events or your own biography, maybe you're in a place that has caused you to step up and say, "Hey, God, I think we need to have a talk. I think we need to redefine our relationship." And if that's you, I want to invite you to step into that conversation. Because you just might find God whispering back to you, I would love to step into that conversation with you because I love you. And I want to start by redefining what you mean by love. Dictionary.com has 21 definitions for the word love. And here's just a quick sampling. A feeling of warm personal attachment, sexual desire or passion, a strong predilection, enthusiasm, or liking for anything. And in tennis, love represents zero. In tennis, love means nothing. 15 love, 30 love. I'm winning, you're losing. It means nothing. And entry number 12, almost smack dab in the middle of this list, you'll find this definition. The benevolent affection of God for his creatures, or the reverent affection due from God or from them back to God. Come on. Come on. If I talk to my wife like that, let me rephrase that. I would never talk to my wife like that. I may not be a genius, but I'm definitely smarter than that. Is it any wonder that we don't understand the love of God when the world just seems to cram or shoehorn in this definition in between 20 other definitions of love that are so inadequate that basically all of them begin to mean the exact same thing by love as love means in tennis, that love begins to mean nothing. Can I offer you a simple definition for love that I believe is completely supported by Scripture and every lasting marriage that I know of? Love, the fierce commitment to remain faithful to your word. The fierce commitment to remain faithful to your word. If I go bald, bankrupt, and get bladder cancer, you wanna know how Cherie can show her true love for me? How she can prove that she loves me? She can remain by my side. She can fight with me, and sometimes she can step up and fight for me. Jesus lived a perfect life, but Jesus's life was not perfect. Do you know what I mean by that? He lived a life free from sin, but he sure did not live a life free from heartache, pain, struggle, betrayal, homelessness, controversy, and oh yeah, death. Yet he says in verse 9, the Father has loved me. Why? Because God had seen him through every one of those situations. God has been fiercely committed to remaining faithful to his word found in Deuteronomy 31:6. The Lord your God goes with you. He will never leave you. He will never forsake you. And not just in Deuteronomy, but throughout all of the books of the law, we see God saying and showing over and over and over and over again his fierce, relentless commitment to remaining faithful to his people, even when they don't keep their word. Because by law, by his law, in his law, what his law is the revelation that his law means that he has to go through it with you. He cannot, under any circumstances, leave you or forsake you, because that would be breaking his own law. His love for you is not some silly, fleeting feeling. It's enduring faithfulness and its everlasting commitment. In the Old Testament, what came first, God's love or God's law? God called Abraham and blessed him and did incredible things in his life over 400 years before the law was introduced. When the children of Israel were slaves in Egypt, did God give them the Ten Commandments and then follow that up a few weeks later by doing a moral audit to see if they passed the test, and then he freed only those who actually obeyed the law? No, not at all. Yahweh, the God who loved his people, liberated them from bondage and then gave them the law, gave them some rules and parameters that would enable them to flourish and to never again become slaves to bondage ever again. And what is it that the law is? How is the law defined in the Old Testament? It's a covenant. It's a covenant.
an agreement between God and his people. There's this amazing story in Genesis 15 that we just unfortunately don't have time to unpack today, but you've got to read it this week. Write it down, put it in your phone, do whatever. Genesis 15, read it this week. It's the story of the covenant ceremony between God and Abraham. Now, you have to know before you start reading the story, in a normal ancient Near Eastern covenant ceremony, you would take a bull and a goat and a ram, and you would cut them in half, and you would place each half on opposite sides of a path. Can you picture that with me? Bull, goat, ram. And then each person entering into this covenant would walk between the pieces of these dead animals as a symbol to say, if I ever break this covenant, may I be like these animals. May I pay for it with my life. But in Genesis 15, God never asks Abraham to walk between the pieces. At no point in Genesis 15 do we ever see Abraham walking between these pieces. It's God alone who puts his name on the line, who puts his life on the line and says, I will remain faithful to you and your family line forever. If you think the law is just a bunch of long books, of long lists of rules, that if people will just obey them, then God, or if they don't obey them, then God is immediately going to crush them and destroy them. I'm telling you, you've never read the law. The books of the law are primarily narrative. They're mostly stories. Stories of God's people again and again and again rejecting him and running from him. But no matter what, God remains faithful to them. It's the story of God, of the God of love, the God fiercely committed to remaining faithful to his love. God's definition of love in the Old Testament is him entering into a covenant with his people that he knows fully well will never hold up their end of the bargain. So he lays one foot in front of the other and he walks between the broken pieces of the animals. God's definition of love in the New Testament is him stepping down from heaven onto this earth, putting one foot in front of the other as he walks between the broken pieces of a wounded, hurting, messed up, twisted, sinful heart like mine. All the way till those same beautiful feet are one day gonna be nailed and broken on a cross to die for people like me who he knows full well will never hold up our end of the bargain, because that is what fiercely committing to and remaining faithful to your word looks like. That's what love, real love, true love, that is what God's love looks like. 1 John 4:10 says, this is love. Not that we love God, but that he loved us and sent his son as an atoning sacrifice for our sins. God kept his word. He remained faithful to Abraham. And in the person of Jesus, God says, hey, Abe, just in case you didn't quite get the metaphor from Genesis 15, I'm gonna renew my covenant. I'm gonna renew my vow to you by literally being broken for you on the cross. Now look, why in the world have we spent almost half of this message unpacking one singular verse? Because I want you to know what Jesus knew. Our God is fiercely committed to remaining faithful to his word, to never leave you and to never forsake you, no matter what you're going through. I want you to see that because Jesus remained connected to God's love for him, he couldn't contain his love for you. Jesus' love for you, for me, it is proof that when you remain in God's love, you just can't contain his love. And I want you, even in the uncertainty of 2020, to remain so connected to God's love that you can't contain his love. I want my family and your family, your neighbors and my neighbors, I want your strangers and my strangers to experience the love of God, the peace of God, the joy of God, the compassion of God, the passion of God, the nearness of God, the commitment of God, the presence of God. I want everyone in the orbit of every single disciple of Jesus that attends Capitol, whether it's online or in person before all of this, I want everybody that comes into our orbit to know and believe that God is still faithful, even in this season that many people fear is not going to be over anytime soon. And I want people to know God's love because they know us. Not because we're perfect, In fact, there's a really smart man who once said, no, it's in our weakness that he is made strong. So it's not that they're going to know his love because we're perfect, but because we remain connected to the God who is, to the God whose perfect love drives out fear. So how can you remain connected to God's love in this season? You may have felt hyper-connected to God in the month of April, but as we step into August, that connection feels like it's all but gone. Do you need to start your own digital small group or socially distanced and socially responsible small group with some friends so that you can begin to rediscover the God revealed within the pages of the Bible so that you can step into his fiercely committed love once again? Do you need to get an Audible subscription so that you can begin to listen to books that will feed your faith and feed your soul while at the same time you're preparing the food that you're going to use to feed your family? Do you need to disconnect? And please don't hear this as legalism, and please don't hear this as anything other than just something to consider. Do you maybe need to disconnect from things like TV and Twitter so that you can stop binging things that are doing nothing to encourage you, nothing to build you up, and instead reconnect with a spiritual friend or two, once again in a socially responsible way, so that you can encourage one another, so that you can build up one another? If you live in the state of Utah, I'm just going to take for granted that you like to do at least something outside, even if it's just going for a walk. So what if instead of popping in your earbuds wherever you go, on that walk, on a bike ride, on a hike, whatever you like to do the most, what if you invited God to reveal himself to you through the things that you love the most? Yesterday, I went for a hike in the morning with my wife and my kids, and we just did Donut Falls because I've got a 7-year-old and an almost 5-year-old. That's about all that they can handle. And yes, I had a sermon to write, but I knew if I was going to have anything to give to you this morning, I needed that magic hoodoo that only comes from a good amount of quality time with my family. And as we reached the top of Donut Falls, I misjudged the stability of a rock that I tried to put my foot on, and it got unstable, and my foot plunged into that cold water in that pool. If you've ever been up there, that pool that's just below the waterfall. And the moment that my foot hit that water, Psalm 23 blasted through my skull. He leads me beside still waters. He restores my soul. And I don't know what this message would have been like if I'd have skipped out on that hike with my family. But I can tell you that hike restored my soul and reassured me that God would remain with me as I continue to prepare for this morning. Whatever you love to do, invite God to speak to you, to restore you, to teach you, to do whatever he wants to do through the things that you love to do. And can I make just one more suggestion? And before I do, can I ask that for your grace, and can I ask for you to hear my heart on this? Can I ask you to remember that I fail every stinking day to do what I'm about to ask you to do? What if we committed to doing everything we could to obey what Jesus called the two greatest commandments? In Matthew 22, Jesus says the two greatest commandments are found in Deuteronomy 6:5 and Leviticus 19:18. Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the first and greatest commandment. And the second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. All the law and the prophets hang on these two commandments. Jesus is saying, if you can nail these two commandments, you can hang your hat up at the end of the day knowing that you nailed them all. With these two commandments in mind, let's step back into the next verse in John 15. If you keep my commands, you will remain in my love, just as I have kept my Father's commands and remain in his love. Now, here's what Jesus is not saying. He's not saying, if you don't keep my commands, I won't love you anymore. That's not what it says. Look at the words. We've already spent the bulk of this message running down God's resume, or the Old Testament, if you want to call it that, running down God's resume, proving his committed love to the commitment phobe known as humanity. Jesus is saying, if you keep his commands, you'll keep coming back. You'll keep remaining in his love. I love my daughter, Eowyn, my almost 5-year-old, and I love exploring nature with Eowyn. And again, yesterday we were almost at the end of our hike and she kept stopping to pick up sticks and rocks or just to sit down and take a break. And I told her, sweetheart, you have to stay with me. You can't keep falling behind, otherwise I might lose you. I want her to be obedient because I want her to stay with me, but she kept being disobedient. So we reached that point where I had to say, Eowyn, if you stop again, if you disobey me again, you're gonna lose your bagel. And as I say that out loud, I wanna clarify something. I'm not a horrible parent. Before we started this hike, my daughter had a bagel with avocado on it and then some weird ginormous pastry that my wife bought before we started the hike. She was totally fine. She just happens to be her father's daughter, which means burritos and bagels are her love language. So this was supposed to be a treat, okay? I'm not malnourishing my child. But I said, Eowyn, if you stop again, you're gonna lose that treat of your bagel. But sure enough, 2 minutes later, she disobeyed my command. So I had to tell her, oh, sweetheart, I'm so sorry, but you've lost your bagel. And yes, Eowyn began to cry. She began to wail, in fact. And you know what else she did? She ran right past me and straight to mommy. Did I stop loving my little girl? Heck no. And I don't think she ever stopped believing that I loved her. But she didn't remain in my love. She ran to Cherie's love. And look, this silly example is painfully true. I do this with God all the time. I know that I lost my temper and I didn't get love right. I know that I put my needs first before my family's needs. I know that I've struggled with depression and feeling disconnected from God in this season, which means it's been a struggle for days, even sometimes weeks just to pray, which means that I feel like I'm not remaining close to God like I should. And I cross that threshold where I begin to believe the lie and I feel like I gotta get my act together or I've gotta figure out how to feel better before I can come to God and confess my sin and ask him to help me to break out of my isolation so I can break into the life-giving relationship with him. Do you see where I get it wrong? Do you see my failure? I don't remain in him. Instead of asking God to fill my mind with reminders of his commitment to me, instead of asking him to fill my heart with his joy and his love for me, I'm the one who chooses to step away from him. I'm the one who doesn't remain in his love. Jesus isn't telling me to keep his commands for his sake. He's telling me to keep them for mine. So that instead of ruminating in my loneliness, I'll remain in his love. And that's why he goes on to say, I have told you this so that my joy may be in you and that your joy may be complete. What is Jesus's joy? Glorifying and honoring the Father. And how does he honor the Father? By keeping the Father's commands and remaining in the Father's love. And what does Jesus say are the two greatest commands? Love God and love others. And what do the teachings of Jesus reveal to us? How people like me and how people like you can obey God and how we can love God and therefore love others. And what does Jesus's death reveal? His uncontainable, unrestrained love for people just like you and just like me. Nothing fills Jesus with more joy than when you and I remain in his love to the point that we just can't contain his love. Don't you see? When you remain in his love, you won't be able to contain your love for living out his commands. And he says this in the next verse, my command is simply this, love each other as I have loved you. We live in a culture that loves love and hates religious rules. Our culture says that love gives life meaning. And I would agree with that, but I would disagree with their definition of love. The majority of our culture defines love as one of the other 20 definitions found on dictionary.com that are basically based on feeling and emotion, not faithfulness and unrelenting devotion. But what would happen? How different would the world be if we all obeyed this one piece of religious dogma to love one another as Christ loved us? What would happen if we loved others, if we gave to others, if we sacrificed for others the same way that Jesus loved, gave, and sacrificed for us? Greater love has no one than this, to lay down one's life for one's friends. You are my friends if you do what I command. Leave it to Jesus to take everything to the extreme. In Matthew 5, Jesus says, if you even look at a woman with adultery in your heart, you've already committed, or I'm sorry, if you look at a woman lustfully, you've already committed adultery with her in your heart. See, I can't even get it straight because I'm so twisted and mangled that I can't get the truth right. He goes on to say to his listeners, if anyone forces you to go 1 mile, go with them 2 miles. So of course, Jesus is going to take love to the extreme because true love, real love is extreme. And he wants his followers, his disciples, to show the world that they are his friends by obeying his extreme command to love people to death. Listen to me, laying down, in the world that we live in, come on, how often are we gonna actually have to die for somebody else? Laying down your life usually doesn't mean dying for someone else. It means dying to yourself. I'm a dad. And I love my kids, but it's so easy for me to put my work, and especially when this is my work, you better believe it's easy for me to put my desire to get words just right, my desire to deliver a perfectly crafted set of words. See, I can't even say that word, so that shows you my failure. How often do I lay these things aside and selflessly build Legos, play with dolls, do whatever in the world my kids wanna do? My kids don't need me to physically die for them every single day. What they need is for me to die to myself, my dreams, my ambitions. And I don't mean giving them up, but it's in that moment of showing them, oh, I'm laying all of that aside because I am here for you. You want to know how you can love like Jesus? Start by asking God to teach you how to die to yourself, to die to your desires, to die to your agenda, just like Jesus. How often around here do we talk about him in the garden? Him in the garden. Father, let this cup pass from me, but nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done. Only when you die to yourself can you begin to live for someone else. And here's the crazy thing. A lot of us have tried to put other people first and we've gotten burned. We have tried to live a life in service of other people and all they've done is take advantage of us. But when you die to yourself and you begin to live for Jesus by serving Jesus, something incredible happens. John 15:15 says, I no longer call you servants because a servant does not know his master's business. Instead, I have called you friends. And look, just like the word love, this can be lost on us. Being a friend of Jesus, it sounds cool, it sounds comforting, it kind of sounds like hippie Jesus. Hey man, everybody, just love everyone, we're all gonna be friends. Look, that may be what it sounds like to us as 21st century Americans, but this statement would have blown the minds and ignited the hearts of the disciples. Because there are only two people in the Hebrew Bible referred to as God's friends. Yes, God loved them. Again, we're not gonna go back through this. You can read the Old Testament in the week to come and see God's track record. He loved them, he loved them, he loved them. He committed, he never left them, he never forsook them. We know that. But there are two people that are specifically referred to as God's friends. Isaiah 41:8, 2 Chronicles 20, verse 7, and James 2:23 tell us, Abraham believed God and it was credited to him as righteousness. He was called God's friend. And Exodus 33:11 says, the Lord would speak to Moses face to face as one speaks to a friend. Abraham, the great patriarch, Moses, the greatest prophet. You ain't gonna find two more esteemed and revered people in all of the Bible. In the Gospels, the religious leaders are always defending themselves by defining themselves as children of Abraham, saying Abraham is our father. And they defend themselves by saying we are committed to the law of Moses. Everyone in Jesus's day revered Abraham and Moses. And now here comes Jesus telling these guys, I revere you by putting you on the same level as Abraham and Moses because you are my friend. If you're a ball player and LeBron James comes up to you and says, you're as good as Michael Jordan. If you're a developer, or a programmer, anyone in the tech world, and Tim Cook comes up to you and says, you are as innovative as Steve Jobs. If you're a writer and J.K. Rowling tells you, your work compares to the greats like Dostoevsky and Dickens, Tolkien, and C.S. Lewis. If your mentor, in whatever field you're in, if your mentor put you on the same level as your heroes, you would feel inspired. You would feel validated. You would feel loved. When you feel validated and respected by those you look up to, you can't wait to get to work because you just can't contain yourself. And if you are a disciple of Jesus, Jesus himself, who is God in the flesh, Jesus looks at you and he calls you friend. Not just to make you feel better about yourself, but because he wants you to know. He wants you to know you're not some employee at the company. You're a partner in the family business. You belong to a long line of incredible people, and you are now numbered and you are named alongside incredible people like Abraham, Moses, King David, Ruth. Keep going down the list, but ultimately and most importantly, you are numbered among King Jesus. And when you remain in the love of Jesus, you're not just in good company, you are the company. You are the company of believers known as the body of Christ. You are the church, capital C, not a building, but a group of people who believe they are loved by Jesus and therefore they are sent by Jesus, sent to spread his love to a hurting world that we're called to heal broken hearts with our words of encouragement and our words of compassion, to feed the hungry, to clothe the naked, to rebuild broken families and shattered egos that have been crushed by this pandemic. Because God has remained faithful to us through our trials, through our pain, through our struggles, through our seasons of uncertainty. Jesus calls us to remain faithful to a world plagued by and imprisoned in uncertainty. And I know so many of us are the ones feeling uncertainty. And I told you a few moments ago that there have been days and even weeks throughout all of this where I have felt so disconnected from God, which means I have doubted everything about myself, including, and you better believe, especially my ability to do my job as a pastor. And in my darkest moments of greatest doubt, even this week, it has been the words of Jesus that have illuminated my soul and guided me through my darkest doubts. This week, I have personalized and internalized his words. Pauly, I no longer call you a servant because a servant doesn't know his master's business. Instead, buddy, I call you friend. For everything that I learned from my father, I have made known to you. Listen to me. You didn't choose me. I chose you and I appointed you so that you could go and bear fruit, fruit that will last. And so whatever you ask in my name, buddy, the Father will give you. Remember, Abraham didn't choose God. God chose Abraham. God found Moses on the mountaintop while Moses was in exile, while he was hiding, while he was in fear. And Moses made every excuse. I'm not a good public speaker. I don't got the credentials, so nobody's gonna listen to me. I got a past. I got priors, and it includes murder. I'm a runner. I'm a quitter. I'm a coward. But God said to Moses over and over and over in Exodus 3 and 4, I will be with you. I am sending you. I will help you speak, and I will teach you what to say. Disciples of Jesus, friends of Jesus, he has chosen you and appointed you to bear fruit, fruit that will last. And he promises that whatever you ask in his name that will empower you to bear fruit and fulfill his commands, he will give to you. So when Jesus says plain as day for the second time, this is my command, love each other, you better believe he will show you who to love and he will show you how to love. And look, we love to quote Philippians 4:19. My God shall supply all of my needs according to his riches and glory. We love to quote that verse when it comes to asking God to provide for us financially. But what if we began to quote this verse when asking God to give us everything we need to love everyone that he has called us to love? What if we committed to keeping this one command to love each other? And what if we chose to do it by committing to remaining in Jesus's love, remaining in his word, trusting his track record, believing the truth of his resume, remembering how he loved his disciples and recalling all the times that he has come through for you and he's come through for me? Only by remaining in Jesus's love can I show the world a Jesus kind of love. Only by loving him and reflecting on the greatness of his love shown through his death can I love others to the point of dying to myself. 1 John 3:16 says, This is how we know what love is. This is how we define love. This is the standard of love. This is the kind of love that we strive for. Jesus Christ laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. The band is gonna lead us in just a moment in one of my favorite songs. And it's called One Thing Remains. And I'm gonna spoil the song if you've never heard it. What is the one thing that remains? His love never fails. It never gives up. It never runs out on me. Higher than the mountains that I face, stronger than the power of the grave. One thing remains. Through constant, through all of the trials and through all of the change, one thing remains. Your love never fails. It never gives up. It never runs out on me. Disciples of Jesus, I don't know exactly what you're going through. I don't know what graves need to be turned into gardens for you. I don't know what ash heap needs to be transformed into beauty for you. But here's what I do know. Left to your own devices, left to my own devices, I am powerless. I am weak. I can't do it. And there are days, there are weeks, there are months where I have to limp or crawl or beg a friend to come along beside me and hoist me up and help me to get to the feet of Jesus and just remain to sit and to soak and to meditate on his love that never fails. It never runs out on me. It never gives up. When I run from him, he is always there. He is chasing me down. We sang it earlier, that his overwhelming, never ending, restless love keeps coming after us. And we all know, we all believe that it is better to give than it is to receive. We all want to leave the world better than how we found it. We all know that loving other people is an incredible and a great thing. But if you're like me, some days I just don't have it in me because I don't have it in me. And in those moments, it's filling my skull with the words of Jesus, with the track record of God, filling myself up as much, just clinging to the truth of his word and going, you better be right. You better come through for me. And then when I step into that situation with somebody else, the only thing I've got, because I feel dumb, I feel like I don't have any words, I don't have any answers for anybody. So I'm not about to be foolish and start saying a bunch of stuff that I'm not convinced is true. So what am I left to do? Encourage people with the words of Jesus. Whatever they're going through, saying, you know what? I don't know what else to tell you, but I can tell you this. He is with you. He is for you. He will never leave you. He will never forsake you. By law, by his law that he cannot break, he will never leave you and he will never forsake you. Do you want to know how to love other people? Love God. Your only piece of homework this week is to love God so that you can love others. The band is gonna lead us in this song, and I wanna encourage you to step into this moment. And I know you're probably in your kitchen or your laundry room or in your living room, and it's a little awkward because it's you and one other person or maybe two other people, and it can seem a little bit weird in this season to raise your hands, to sing out, to maybe cry in front of other people, to forget about the words and just to soak in God's presence. I know that can be a little bit weird, but I am asking you to step out of yourself, out of what makes you comfortable, and step into that awkward place where you just say, God, I can't do anything else right now, but remain in your love. And I do hope that you feel this love. I do hope that the words of this song penetrate your soul and they fill you with his love and with his joy and with his marvelous light and with his peace. And I hope that every day this week is different than last week. I'm sure hoping that for myself. I'm hoping that every day this week is different from last week because you believe these words, that his love never fails and it never runs out on you. But I ask you to take it one step further and ask the Holy Spirit to give you the supernatural ability, because left to your own natural means, you don't have anything to give. But I pray that you would ask the Holy Spirit to give you the supernatural power to love others around you, your wife, your kids, your husband, your family, your roommates, the person, whoever it is that God brings across your path. Remember the God that was the only one who walked through the path and said, I will never fail you. I will never leave you. And use that as the standard to step in and to tell somebody else, all I can do is walk beside you, walk with you.
higher than the mountains that I face, stronger than the power of the grave, constant in the trial and the change, this one thing remains, this one thing remains. Out on me, your love never fails and never gives, never runs out on me. Your love, and on and on it goes. Yes, it overwhelms and satisfies my soul, and I'm never. Have to be afraid, 'cause this one thing remains. Oh, your love never fails and never gives up, it never runs out on me. Your love never fails and never gives up, it never runs out on me. Your love never fails and never gives up, it never runs out on me.
Friends, have you noticed? You begin to act like the people you hang around with. You begin to act like the people you hang around with. You begin to think like the people you hang around with. You begin to talk like the people you hang around with. If you spend a fair bit of time with people who cuss like sailors, no offense to sailors, most sailors don't cuss. But if you spend a lot of time with people who talk like that, you'll be surprised by the words that'll slip out of your mouth. Here's the question I want to ask you as we conclude our time together. Who are you keeping company with? See, when you remain in him, you come to find out what the psalmist tells us in Psalm 103, that the Lord is compassionate and gracious. He's slow to anger and abounding in love. I'm learning. I'm learning more and more. The more time I spend with him, the more I see his character traits reflected in me. Compassion, graciousness. I become slower to anger. I abound in love. Friends, that's my prayer for you today, is that you would remain in him and in his love. There's a verse for the week. It's in John chapter 15. You can download this image along with the graphic that follows. We're thrilled you joined us online. If you'd like to receive prayer, send us an email, care@capitalchurch.com. Or just tell us right in the feed if you're watching live, because we'd love to pray with you even right now. Here's my prayer for all of you. May you remain in his love, so that you might overflow with his uncontainable, unceasing, life-giving love for the people around you. Thanks for joining us. Grace and peace. Friends, I didn't have time, but I was going to run to the back and get a cowbell and join you. I know, I really was. And yes, I have some cowbells back there.